Greetings, gentle being. I am Thorn Winter, and this is the Weirdcraft Podcast, the podcast all about weird fiction, but mostly about writing weird fiction. I am a weird fiction writer. I have been writing weird fiction for over 20 years. I have also been writing nonfiction and self-help books as a ghost writer and doing consultations for other writers of fiction, nonfiction, marketing material, that kind of stuff. So that's a bit about my background. I also just had to take a two-week break from writing the articles on the website and producing this show. That's because I have ventured into some new territory. I am putting my vocal background. I was a metal singer way back. Even before that, I sang more classic rock folk tunes. After that, I started screaming for some hardcore bands, some punk bands I sang for. And then after that, the last real musical performances I gave were as the frontman for a prog rock group. I since walked away from music. There wasn't enough there for me. It seemed like very finite in terms of the expression for me. Anyway, I know there's a lot of good musicians. This is the thing. I'm not a good performer. I'm not a good musician, right? I'm not a good vocalist in that sense. But what this did do was give me some pipes and some vocal training that really lends itself well to something I do love doing and am actually good at because of my background, both as a writer and as a Dungeons and Dragons player and LARP player, which is acting and role playing. And so I have just started a course under Steve Bloom. He's known for he was the voice actor who voiced Spike Spiegel from Cowboy Bebop. He was the voice of Wolverine. So I took 2 weeks off to focus on that and to work on some demo reels and that kind of thing. So my apologies for not being here and being able to produce the article in the cast. But here we are. Let's push forward. What I'm hoping is that you took that 2 weeks and used it to either come up with another story or another two stories or whatnot, but better would have been to, I shouldn't say better. Alternatively, what I really hope you did is just put more time into the planning of your story and the learning of your story, because what we're going to move into now is the actual writing of the rough draft. Don't start writing your rough draft until you can tell the story. A good way to test that is to get a friend and say, hey, can I tell you a story? You'll find that in telling the story out loud to someone, you might actually find some spots that you recognize are logical errors, continuity errors, don't necessarily come across as clear as what you might be trying to express. And then the person you're telling the story to, you know, you can ask them for the feedback on that and they can tell you that and they can say, hey, this was what it was. I didn't get this. This came through and really worked for me. Oh, by the way, you know, this character that you are killing off in your fourth scene actually died right at the beginning of your story when the phantasm appeared. You know, stuff like that, which if you missed that, you might want to focus a little bit more. But that's just an example. But there's subtler stuff. Whenever I write something, I have two real professional editors that I work with. But then I've got three other people that I just sometimes send stuff off to just to say, hey, you know, what do you think of this? You know, the more eyes that you put on your work, the better. Tell your story. Get that feedback. When you can do that and feel really confident in telling your story, then you're ready to write it. Because that's what you're going to do. You're going to tell your story in writing. And you want to be able to tell it well. You want to be able to focus on the writing and not be thinking about characters and what they're going to do and your story. So develop those characters, develop that plot line, get that step sheet put together like we talked about in the last actual episode I recorded, obviously not the break episode. So once you have all that and you're all ready to go, then you're ready to write your story. So you sit down. The first thing I'm going to address is writer's block. You hear people talk about writer's block as like the end all be all. You know, in the 80s and the 90s when we were learning about writing, it was one day, writer's block is going to happen to me. And it was like on par with Alzheimer's, right? Or cancer or something. Like, oh, my, by the gods, I hope that one day I don't end up with writer's block. That is not really the case. As you gain experience as a writer, I think that one of the things you realize, and I wish that I talked to more experienced writers too back then, because I grew up in the middle of nowhere. I had maybe two really good writers, one of whom then moved to Hollywood And, you know, I didn't really get a lot of that kind of information, so I had to find that on my own. I'm giving it to you here now. I'm telling you, writer's block is a myth. It does not exist. Writer's block just means that you didn't study, you didn't develop your characters enough, you didn't talk to them enough, and you didn't develop your plot line, also known as your step sheet, enough. You don't know your story. And that's exactly what writer's block is. Oh, my God, I don't know what's going to happen next. I don't know what my story is. And, you know, I don't know what this character is going to do. Or you have too many ideas and you're like, oh, I don't know if I want him to go this way. I don't know if I want him to go that way. Either way, it's writer's block. You're locked. You're frozen. You can't move. If you experience writer's block, you didn't develop your character enough and you don't know your story enough. So you need to go back. Talk to the character, whatever character is involved in that scene, go all the way back, start right at the beginning, just like you when you're troubleshooting a piece of equipment, right? Start right at where it plugs into the wall. So go right back to your character and say, okay, talk to me. Tell me how you would handle this situation. Don't think about it as yourself. Don't think about it as the writer. You know, how would you handle this situation, character? And then let the character answer you. You might need to do some more search writing, right? You might do this kind of writing where you're just dropping words out in kind of an automatic fashion, waiting for that character to take you over, right? Remember that kernel we talked about? So you want to reconnect with that kernel of that character, become that character again, and let the character tell the story. This is super, super important. So start with interviewing the characters. After you interview those characters, you're probably going to find the insight after you do it long enough. You know, it's not an instantaneous. Sometimes it is instantaneous. Sometimes you sit down, you start writing, and you're like, oh, okay, that's exactly what they would do. And listen, I've been there. Like, right? It's just that I know not to call it writer's block. I just know that, oh, I must not have gone deep enough there yet. So let me get back there and do that. Go back there, talk to your characters, and find out what's going on there. After you're done with that, you're going to probably have some natural leads that are going to change your step sheet. Go ahead and change your step sheet right then and there. If that change in your step sheet required you to go back in your step sheet, back before the point that you are at in the story where you're actually doing the writing, the rough draft writing, don't go back and change it in the writing. I cannot express this enough. And I'm going to touch on this again later, so I'm not going to go too far. Your writer's block is just a matter of you knowing your story, and that'll get you through anything. There won't be any blocks there for that. By removing that and by knowing your story and knowing that you're ready to tell the story in writing, you'll be able to focus on that language usage, on the technical skills of the writing and the clarity of the writing. It's going to remove all that other clutter out of your head. You know, this is kind of the same as, you know, think about it if you're building a house. And, you know, a lot of writers jump right to the siding because they know what they want the story to look like, but they forget to create a structure. So if you don't have a foundation and a structure and you just start throwing up siding, it's going to look, you know, like a badly built treehouse, you know, kind of thing. If you want to build a solid house for your story, get that foundation really, really solid. Yeah, that's your premise, right? Your foundation. After that, get your framework. I should say that the foundation is really your premise and your characters, right? So get your premise and know your characters. Have that strong foundation. That's your kernel that you're going to work from. Then from there, really nail down that structure. Work that step sheet. Don't give up on it until it is singing. Profluence is this concept of your story flowing. Your story doesn't become profluent in the writing. You know, when you're writing the rough draft or when you're doing your editing, that profluence occurs in your step sheet. You want to find that profluence there first. Then you can put profluent language on top of that profluent structure. So your profluence has to have its own continuity throughout your creative process. Now, this is your rough draft that you're about to write. Let it be unpolished. The rough draft is the punk rock version of your story. It's the studio take. You want to put raw emotion out there. You want to put unfiltered thought. You want to do some, not necessarily automatic writing, but what you want to do is find a balance to your technical writing and your emotion, right? Because you're going to shave this down later. You're going to pull back on some things. You're going to amplify some other things. And then you're going to put out this polished story. That's what the next phase is. But right now, you just need to tell the story. You got to give yourself something to work with. Let it be punk rocky, right? scream into that microphone, blast on that guitar, and just distort it and make it happen and let it be whatever it's going to be. You know, at this point, you've done a lot of thinking and creating. Now's the time to just be poetic and let it come out and embrace the drama, so to speak, right? You're going to get right back to technical stuff and you're going to miss this creative kind of writing, this poetic stage, I'm telling you, because the next phase is going to kick your ass. So let's enjoy being here, right? There's really no one way to actually write a story. Everybody's got their own method, and I expect that you're going to develop your own method. But what I want to do is tell you some of the things that are in the forefront of my mind when I write a story, so that as you're writing your rough draft, you can really stick to these. I don't want to call them rules, but they're my guidelines. You know, I'm a rule breaker, and you have to be in order to make something really creatively worthy. So the first thing I will say is that I concentrate on is I have to force myself to expand on the step sheet. And, you know, as creators, as artists, our mind is always going, right? We've always got ideas flowing and different things that are popping out, and we don't want to let any of them go because, oh my God, that's the next one. That's going to make me $1 million. Let that go. I mean, sure, there's a lot of very popular, well-paid writers that are out there, but if you want to be a working writer, start there. You know, unless you want to be like Stephen King doing laundry at the laundromat with, you know, your wife and kid, you know, barely able to eat or get the medicine that they need. Be a working writer first is what I do. You know, I got a wife and I got three daughters and I need to make sure that they're taken care of. So I've always been a working writer first, probably to the extreme of Steve, because, you know, I put too much focus on being a working writer and not enough focus on being my own writer and putting out my work, you know? So that's why I'm here now is I'm publishing my work under my own name for the first time. You know, I've put some things out there before, but it was never anything serious. It was never anything I was really, laying down a wager on, putting anything at stake. You know, and before, like I said, it was always ghostwriting. So somebody else put their name on it. And you just, you know, as a person, you just sometimes don't think that people are going to care what you have to say. You don't think that your stuff's going to be good enough. But for some reason, you put somebody else's name on it and sure, have it. And, a little bit of that detachment, I think, is important for us as writers. And that's something that I have recently had to learn is how to detach from that. And more for the better, because I'm putting out stories. They may not be the best stories in the world, but they're mine and they're authentic. And at the end of the day, I'm happy with them. But I wrote so many stories, you know, in my teens and in my 20s and even into my 30s that I actually look back at them now. I never looked at them before because I always just threw them in my slush pile and thought, oh, one day I'll have the ability to be able to write this and it'll actually be good. But I go back and look at them and I'm like, huh, that's not really that bad. You know, I just actually pulled one right out raw. It was the best one from my younger years, I think. And I recorded it for my other show, Dread Glimpse Podcast. And I thought it turned out well. You check that out. If you go to dreadglimpse.com, there's a link there. You can download the Dread Glimpse Podcast on any of your favorite pod players. So sticking to these rules, we want to expand on the step sheet. It seems like it's a no-brainer. It seems like you need to do that. But the truth is like I was saying, once you start creating, even this little rant I just went off on, right? You can see my creative mind. It goes from one thing to the other. And that's good. Don't ever lose that flexibility. That's important because that's your gold. That's your sacred nectar is that creativeness, that imagination, that looseness, right? It's like a muscle that's able to snap real quick. You want to be like Bruce Lee in your imagination. So I don't want to get rid of that ability, but I need to learn how to focus myself so that I'm not creating all the time. And that's important. So I'm going to stick to that step sheet. And that's why it's there, because it allows you to stop creating and put a line between your imagination and your technical writing, because now you want to focus on doing some writing. You don't want to deviate from your plan. Also, the other thing is, you know, as you're creating, you'll change your story. And then now you're all of a sudden going back to edit things, to change the step sheet, and now you're getting bogged down in editing. And I'm going to get that in a little bit, but I'm going to tell you this right now. I want this to stick in your head. I'm learning some voice acting now, so every now and again I'm going to do things like this where I'm going to say, "Do not edit your stories." Don't edit your stories. Not yet. Wait until the actual editing phase. Just write right now. That's it. Have your step sheet next to you. Refer to it constantly and write. Part of that writing, or I should say part of it, how I do that writing is I turn each step of the step sheet into a scene. It's its own mini story. And I break it down so that it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And all of the characters who are going to be included in that scene have a change that they go through. It could be a subtle change. It could be a drastic change. Either way, I want each scene to be its own little mini story. And I'm going to let all of that hard work that I did developing my characters and building that step sheet, I'm going to let that pay me off now. I'm going to listen to what I wrote. I'm going to pay attention to what I wrote. And I'm going to break that up into my scenes. So what I do is to break up each sentence of the step into its own paragraph for the scene. So now I'm not only breaking it up, but now I'm blowing it up, right? So what was a summary on the step sheet is now going to be turned out into some prose. You know, it's going to have some dialogue, it's going to have some narrative, and it's going to be the story. So I take each step. It's the scene, and I got that lined up. I know what's coming. And because I did my homework, I know what my scene structure is. I know what order the scenes are taking place in. Now I'm just focusing on becoming each character in and out. And then during the writing phase, this is where it really gets crazy. This is where you really want to practice that becoming of characters, because now you're going to be slipping in and out of voices, right? When they, you know, when, this is something that always bothered me. And this is why I do the podcast too, by the way, because all the information that I'm giving to you here is in the article that I published at the website. That's at theweirdfictionwriter.com/the-rough-draft. All this information is there, but the podcast is because I, you know, all this stuff comes to my mind once I'm, you know, really ruminating on the concept, right? And all these ideas of you know, as I think back over my, you know, two decades of writing, the stuff that helped and hindered. That's why listening to the podcast is so important. Take each step from the step sheet, break it down into its own mini scene. And then take the individual sentences of the steps, turn them into the paragraphs of the scene. Now, when I write a novel for somebody, my step sheets are expanded almost like dark matter expands the universe, right? I'm not just expanding the length of the number of steps in my step sheet. I actually end up expanding those steps because now you're in a novel, you're drawing everything out. You don't want to just draw out thing, you know, you don't want to just add to a novel. A lot of novels, less happens in them than happens in some short stories. And that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. Actually, there's a lot right with it. So you want to expand your story if you're going to write in novel form to make each individual step expand. You're going to put more into each step, not just add more steps. So That's how that, you know, you can blow up an idea into a novel. And that's how come, you know, I've taken ideas before that started as novels and turned them into short stories because it just worked better as a short story. And I've taken short story ideas and done the reverse. And this is how you do that is you expand at that structural point when you're developing the step sheet. So you got each scene turned into or each step turned into a scene. Each sentence from the step, you're going to break into a paragraph for that scene. Beginning, middle, end. Make sure the characters involved all change. Don't change your story. Stick with your story. If there are going to be other stories to tell, you're going to write other stories in the future. You can even use the same characters. You can even use the same structure. Honestly, you can write a story, submit it, get rejected, not know why, and then figure, you know what? Let me try this. Let me rewrite the story. Go back to your step sheet, go back to your characters, do some more development, do some more structural development, and then rewrite that story and see what you come up with next, right? So anything's possible, and you just have to give yourself room for that. Now, the next thing is that I have to constantly remind myself is just get it done. You can get caught in an endless loop of making it better, right? I have stories that I still have in my folder that's marked slush. And then inside of that folder is ideas. And then there's another folder that says rework, right? I have so much of this stuff that I don't even have time to go back through it. Honestly, as soon as I'm feeling brave enough, at some point, I may just, as an exercise, go and delete that folder. We'll see what happens. It'd take a lot for me to do that, but you can rework things forever. Don't do that. Stick to the story. Trust the work that you did in developing your characters and in developing your step sheet, and just go from there. If you want to be a working writer, you have to produce. If you just want to do a one-off, you want to spend your life writing your masterpiece, go for it. By all means, go for it. I'm not here to tell you not to do that. But I'm talking to writers that want, particularly weird fiction writers, but I'm talking to writers that want to work for a living, that want to make some money. You know, we don't get paid a lot. We don't get paid a lot for these stories, right? So, you know, if you're getting $300 for a story, that's pretty good, to be honest with you. I don't think that's fair. To be honest, you know, when I publish stories for people, I pay at least 8 cents a word, sometimes 12 if it's a really good story, you know, if it's really well written. Bearing that in mind, you got to work, you got to produce stories, you got to get stuff out there. So don't spend a lot of time on them. Get it done. Do the best writing you can as the writer you are at the time. You can always rewrite it in the future. So get it done. The next thing is, I already said this, is to break each sentence of your scene, each sentence of the step gets broken down into a paragraph for the scene. And, you know, the reason I want to touch back on this is because there's a guy, Randy Ingermanson, and he's written a couple of books. I think he does the Writing Fiction for Dummies book. And he actually, the book that I had read from him was something he had put out. It was called The Snowflake Method of Writing. Or writing a novel using the snowflake method or something like that. You can look it up on Amazon. Just look up Randy Ingermanson. I'll include these links in the show notes. I'll try to hunt them down for you. The first thing that struck me about Randy Ingermanson was I didn't really like his mechanical style. I also read some of his fiction. He's got some real hard science fiction, which I'm not really a fan of to begin with. So that qualifies me as not being able to criticize Randy Ingermanson right there, right? I don't think you can be critical of something you're not a fan of. Like, if you don't have an emotional connection to something, you should stay the hell out of it. That's my opinion. I mean, zero disrespect to Randy Ingermanson right now with the stuff I'm about to say. And in fact, what I'd like to do is draw attention to the praise that I want to give him. So I found that his system was too mechanical for me. You know, I like to be more poetic in my writing. I don't like it to be a technical exercise, which for hard fiction fans, I'm sure that is exactly what they want. For me, I want some poetry to my scenes. But just like in, you know, I've said before in, you know, in weird fiction, your dark becomes darker when you present it in contrast to light. The same thing is true. I am so poetic. I have so much emotion that pours out of me that it's good for me to have a bit of this mechanical nature clamp me down a little bit. And writers like me that are, you know, you're just always bubbling this stuff out, you need to get yourself clamped down. You need to focus. And Randy's methods do this for me. So I actually use it in kind of a bastardized loose form. So his snowflake method, you know, the basic concept is that you're going to, you know, build one thing off another, and you're going to start all the way down at the sentence structure, right? So in your sentence, you're going to have something happen and you're going to have a reaction to that occurrence. You write a sentence and then you respond to that sentence and then you respond to that sentence. So you create this chain, right? And then that is replicated in your paragraphs. And then that's replicated in your throughout your story, right? So I'm not an expert on Randy Ingermanson's stuff. Like I say, I use a very bastardized, loose idea of it as I'm writing, where I do try to have that action reaction. I find that if I just let myself go, I could easily write a few thousand poetic words. You know, I can get very Robert Browning very quick. You know, for years, I was one of the people that thought Robert Browning was misjudged by the populace. And he was, because he was a poet. Right? He never billed himself as a popular writer or anything like that. He was a poet. So in poetry, you can let that stuff flow and you can let that be and you can let it expand in its own and let that emotion be there. In fiction writing and specifically in pop fiction writing. And that's what we're doing, right? We're writing hard and fast stories that get out there, entertain, give you what you want, and get you to buy the next one from us. That's pulp fiction. I say pop fiction, but it's pulp fiction, right? It's the same thing as they were doing back then. In fact, that's where, you know, weird fiction really hit its golden age, was during the pulp fiction era and before. When I apply Randy Ingermanson's snowflake method, I do it very loosely and in this very bastardized way. I just keep it in mind that I want there to always be an action, reaction, action, reaction. And this plays more into that profluence that I was talking about earlier, where you want that profluence to be in your characters. You want it to be in your plots and in your story structure. And then you want it to be in your writing. And this is how you bring that profluence into your writing, is you have, you know, change occur even down to the sentence. When you start the sentence to the end of the sentence, something should have happened. And this is where a lot of writers, you know, when you get told, here's another little side rant that I'm going to give you, that this is where the gold of this podcast is, right? So we're always told, show, don't tell. And the truth is that you get told all these things, and there's a lot of concepts in writing and in a lot of creative avenues that people tell you these watchwords, and it's like, forgive my language here, but what the fuck do you mean? And this is when, you know, people that have a concept of this show, don't tell, or even some people that don't have a concept of it, that think they have a concept of it, this is exactly what they mean by this, is that you want to have something happen. You don't want to tell your reader that something happened. You don't want to tell them what something was. You want to have it be and have it occur, right? And even in that, I'm saying this, and some of you are out there and you're like, yeah, Thorne, but what the fuck do you mean? And so let me try to put that into I don't even know how to put this into a perspective, really. It's one of those things you just learn from reading and writing over time, right? It's like anything else that's like a soul thing that just absorbs into you. Yeah, eventually, after you've written enough and after you've done this enough, it's going to click for you. And hopefully sooner rather than later, you want to always have this action occur. And so that's where I do apply those. And honestly, for me, I think it was probably Randy Ingermanson and his book that really gave me a technical way to interact with that feeling of profluence in my language and in my writing, and not just in the characters and the development. I would check it out. Honestly, I think it's worth a read. I always think everything's worth a read because I read a lot. I get a lot of books and ebooks and all that stuff. And if you're a writer, you should have all that stuff. You need to read. Anybody that thinks otherwise, I think that, sure, you know, they might have their exercise that they're doing, or whatever it is they're doing. But I think at the end of the day, if you want to be a successful paid writer, you need to read, and read a lot. So I also had mentioned earlier, too, you know, about changing the plot. There are times where you're going to need to change the plot. You know, you might be writing your story and you might say to yourself, oh, well, you know, this doesn't really fit. You know, it got through my development phase. It got through my telling this story to a friend phase. None of us caught it. But the truth is, it just didn't fit. I got to make this fit. I got to make this work. The character wouldn't do this, or the character can't do this because they're doing something else. What you do is you stop writing, go back to your step sheet, make the change on your step sheet, and then on your step sheet, make any other changes that ripple from that either into the past of your story or moving forward into the future of your story, so that you have that thing in there with continuity. So make the change on your step sheet. Listen to me on this. Really open your mind up right here. Hey, if you're not paying attention, listen right now. Make the change on your step sheet, but do not make the change in your story so far. And all of the writing that you've done up to that point, do not go back and try to change it. Don't do it. It is a terrible, hellacious void that you will not come back from. I promise you. At this stage, just write the story, get it done. You're going to do a bunch of editing later. And at that point, you'll be able to go back and change what you wrote originally. But for now, get that story written down. Make the change in your step sheet, but don't change it in your story. Just pick up from right where you are, where you made the change, and keep pushing forward in your writing. You know you've made the change. It's going to be there in your head. It's there on your step sheet. Just keep pushing forward with the writing. Do not go back and edit your writing. Please. This is going to move me right into some of the other topics for later. Actually, I'm going to save that for the end because I really want to drive this particular topic home. So another thing that I like to do is to set a loose limit to my writing, right? I don't like to set a hard limit. I don't like to be like, oh, I'm going to write exactly a 7,500 word story. I used to do that. You know, I used to get clients, because some clients would demand that it was exactly this amount of wordage. But, you know, as I got older and I had more work and I could turn people away, I just got to the point where I would tell people, yeah, it's going to be around there. And, you know, I'm going to tell the story and I'm going to let it be the best story it can be. So when I write a story now, I let myself write a little bit more than what I'm going to include in the final, but not that much, because I probably only cut about 20% of the rough draft into the final draft, to be honest with you. And sometimes I won't cut any, or sometimes I cut down even more. But I'd say on average, if you were putting a gun to my head and asking me, I'd say I probably about 20% of my writing gets taken out of a rough draft. And the reason that I take out so little, you know, before I started using all these development methods, these character development methods, these structural development methods, I probably used to write, you know, 250,000 words in development and story structure and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And then my rough draft, honestly, like my average short story sometimes ran up into the 20 to 30,000 word range, because I wasn't doing all this like deep structural investigation and deep character development. And so I had to do some more investigative writing, and that became part of my rough draft. And I just, you know, making the connection and learning to pull that investigative writing out of your writing is really a big deal for me, because it made me able to write a hell of a lot less. So my rough draft, now I've got all my characters developed. I've got my story structure developed. I know what's happening in the story. I can talk to somebody. I can tell them the story over a Zoom chat or something like that, or over the phone. And it's solid. That's when I know that I'm ready to start writing. So I can set a loose limit. So it's like if I'm writing for somebody and they say, oh, I want this to be, you know, it needs to be a 6,000 word story for this contest I'm trying to enter. Yes, I'm going to tell you right now, people do it all the time. I'm not going to ever mention any names. I'm not ever going to say anything, because I respect my clients and their privileges, and I don't judge them is the other thing. What you got to realize is that everybody's out there trying to make a buck and trying to build their reputation. And a lot of people don't have confidence in their writing. And it's one of the reasons why I'm doing what I'm doing right now, is because I want you all to become more confident in your writing. I don't want you to have writer's block. I don't want you to have writer's anxiety. I've gone through all that. I've dealt with all of it. I've come out of the other side. Come with me. There's a better way out there. So all you former clients of mine that I've ghostwritten some stories for contests or for whatever it is that wanted to build your platform, just like I always told you back then, a lot of you, you know, most of you, in fact, I still know, and we still, you know, I still help you out with your stuff. But just remember that you are a writer and you have something of value to say. And it may not be of value to anyone. It might only be of value to a couple of other people, but that's it. Put your message out there and let the people decide, right? But get your authentic message out there. And again, I'm not trying to take work away from ghostwriters or take away from that. I still do it. And I'm going to do it, right? Because I got three daughters. Like, you know, a lot of people have like feelings about that, but whatever, just relax, go write a story. All right. So with this loose limit, if I'm aiming for a 7,500 word story, right? So that's pretty much our short story limit. So when most people come to me and they just say, I want to write a short story, they don't really know what a length is. They just know they want a short story. So I say, well, you know, pretty much anything under 7,500 words. I follow the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America guidelines. So I run for 7,500 words. So if I'm going to do that, I'll generally have my rough draft be somewhere under 9,000 words. And that's a cutoff. I cut myself off. And so when I design my structure, I know how much wordage I'm gonna spend in each particular section, and I assign that. So, and that's actually probably a good that would be a good topic for a future article and a future podcast, is how to break up a scene, a story, into its structure. And because there's so many different structures, and then you want to spend words. I mean, that's really what you're doing, is you're spending words on different parts of your structure to tell the story. So that's something I'm gonna write down for a future topic. I keep myself to this 9,000 words if that's a 7,500 word short story. It's about, you know, I basically just add about 20% to whatever they're going to do. And I will whittle that down at later in the editing phase as low as I can get, because I want to, you know, I'm listening to Strunk here, right? So I'm hearing Professor Strunk in my head, you know, brevity. I want to be brief. I want to, my job as a writer is to get the reader up out of the swamp as quickly as possible and onto dry land, so that they know the setting, they know the characters, they know what's happening. And then after that, my job is to take them through the story as quickly and as clearly as possible and entertain them and give them that final punch that they could take away. That is that weird feeling, right? That disconnection. So focus on your job. Don't make the writing about you. Make it about your reader. If you make it about you, you'll love it. And a couple of people out there that'll like you will love it. But if you make it about your reader, more people are going to love it. So set those limits and stick to that. You know, you want to deliver that psychic vision as concisely and as clearly as you can. Brevity is really your friend here. I always try to write like Hemingway. You know, this is another spot that I differ from some other weird fiction writers. You know, they get very expositive, they, you know, very long narratives. And that's okay. I don't knock that. It's just it's not my flavor, right? I like to get in there, tell a story, and get out. Just do my job. That's it. I'm not trying to pass along any kind of political message or religious message. I'm not trying to convince you of anything. I just want to entertain you with the flavor of fiction that you enjoy, which is your doom and your destruction. So that's what I do. So this brings me up to the absolute most important rule. I've mentioned it already, but I'm going to say it again. If you go and read the article at theweirdfictionwriter.com/the-rough-draft, you will see this three times, because that's how important it is. Do not edit.
Do not edit.
Did you hear that? Do not edit. Leave the editing for later. Don't lose momentum on your story. Get yourself through your story. In the next phase, you're going to get to edit. Do not edit. Do not edit. Even in a line, if you mistype a line or you suddenly decide, oh, that line is not as wonderful as it could be, forget it. You're the quickest way to kill a story is to whip out your thesaurus, because once you do it, you're going to be doing it all the time. You're going to be like, oh, I want my language to be amazing. I want it to really buzz. And you know what? Every once in a while, maybe you need to do that. But between you, me, and the wall, you should be learning your language in advance of that. You should be reading. You should be communicating well. You should be talking to other writers and other people who are articulate, so that you can really have your own language to draw from. You know, my language is probably very limited in comparison to a lot of the other writers that are out there, but it's not how much language you know, it's how well you are able to use it. And, you know, I'm always learning more every day, but I don't have the greatest memory in the world either. So sometimes things stick, sometimes things don't, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to be a genius to be a good storyteller. You just have to let yourself tell a story. So let yourself do that. Don't edit. Don't use the thesaurus too often. Don't go crazy, you know, even going online, using the online thesaurus. Just let yourself write the story. When you edit later, if you come across a word that you've used too many times, or you want to add some more color to a story, that's when you're going to whip out your thesaurus. That's when you're going to polish up your writing. That's when you're going to, you know, you might at that point take a sentence and break it apart and move its different parts around and try to see how you can better make it fit or flow for final profluence. Because remember, you want that profluence all the way through from beginning to end, not just the beginning and the end of the story, but the beginning and end of your creative process. So save the editing for later. You're going to be doing a lot of it. So don't kill your fun. You're about to finish the last fun part of writing. Editing unless you're a sick psychopath like I am, editing is not fun for everybody. I love editing. Between You, Me, and the Wall, that's my chance to go. That's my chance to finally open up and be like, okay, I could change this. Oh, thank you. But for now, don't edit. All right. So that's it. I ran a little bit over on this episode, but the truth is hopefully you missed me a little bit and wanted to hear my voice just a little bit longer and gain some more of this wisdom. And the other thing is I don't want to rob you. I don't want to cheat you. I'd rather keep your attention for just a little bit longer and get some concepts into your head and go ahead and listen to these podcasts over again too. People pick on me and my wife, she thinks it's hilarious because I will listen to something over and over again, especially now that I'm learning a whole new career path, right? So I'm trying to change from my past of being a singer and an underground rapper and all this other stuff that I did back then. I'm trying to morph that into this new career path. And so my instructor, I am just constantly watching this guy's videos and I will watch them over and over again. And I put them on my phone. And I let them play over the speakers in the house just so I can hear it. And that's how you really learn stuff. And that's why reading the articles is good, but listening to these podcasts is awesome too. And listen to them over and over again. Immerse yourself in this world. If you want to be a writer, you got to drown yourself in it. And that's what I'm doing right now with my new career path. I'm drowning myself in it. And that's the only way to really master something. So let yourself do it. Read a lot. Write a lot. Edit later. but most importantly, folks, stay weird. I am Thorn Winter, and you have just listened to the Weirdcraft Podcast.